your day with Green Farm's new high protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Green, it's Friday the 12th of November and this is Game On. Coming up today, Alan Cawley is in studio to reflect on last night in the Aviva, and I think he might disagree with this.
It was all right, but, you know, if you're looking for a confirmation that Stephen Kenny's the way to go after that, I wouldn't make a judgment on that because Portugal had a B team out.
We were a bit distracted at the top of the show because we were watching the Republic of Ireland under-21s in action against Italy, and they have just conceded a goal in their European qualifier. We'll have updates on that throughout the show. We'll also be live to Michael Corcoran at the RDS as the Irish women take on the USA. And we'll get some final thoughts as the All Blacks say they won't leave anything to chance tomorrow.
Ireland have got some characteristics themselves as a team over the last 5 or 6 years that haven't changed. They're well organised, they're physical, they clearly understand their roles and they play accordingly.
Jane Mangan will talk racing as Rachel Blackmore shows us more heroics in the saddle. And if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Now, Alan Cawley is with me in studio, but we are going to cross straight to Adrian Eames, who is watching the Republic of Ireland under-21s in action against Italy. Adrian.
Marie, just a few moments ago, the Italians making the breakthrough here to lead by a goal, to a rather unfortunate goal for an Irish side to concede, given that they had acquitted themselves so well up to that point. The goal in the 38th minute, Mark McGuinness, their central defender, got himself into a bit of a tangle, lost his bearings, lost his footing, and the ball ran loose and was hammered into the back of the net by Lorenzo Lucha, the Italian striker, making no mistake, it was a pretty tidy finish from him. And of course, we're at a very critical point in terms of this qualifying campaign for Jim Crawford's under-21s. Ireland, fourth in the group, but they lost last time out to Montenegro, so this game against Italy, absolutely key. And obviously Italy with an array of talent, given the footballing nature of Italian football and the pedigree that brings with it. And Sweden, of course, topping the group. And Sweden, by the way, currently leading Bosnia and Herzegovina in the group by a couple of goals to nil. That game kicked off at 5 o'clock, but Ireland behind. Ireland had started very, very well in the opening 4 or 5 minutes. They had penned Italy back. Tyrick Wright with a cross from the left-hand side, which was clawed behind by the Italian goalkeeper, Carnecci, who had to really backpedal just to knock the ball over the bar. And Ireland more than giving a good account of themselves in the opening half an hour, but they fell to that sucker punch of a goal converted by Lucha. Jim Crawford making a couple of changes as well, 4 changes in fact, from the Montenegro match last time out. Conor Noss, Will Smallbone, Tyrick Wright, and UCD's Colm Whelan making his first start at this level, drafted into the team. So we played just over 33 minutes here at Talas Stadium, and it's the Italians who lead Ireland by 1-0.
Adrian Eames, thank you so much for that update, and we will check in with you again a little bit later on in the programme. Alan, you have watched quite a lot of this Ireland under 21 team. I know there has been a lot of suggestion that we're going to see continuity in the way that our underage teams play and that they would reflect what the national team do. Have you been seeing that?
Yeah, I think so. It's slightly different formation, Marie, but I definitely think in terms of the way the approach and trying to play and get it down, and obviously two ball players in the midfield with Conor Coventry and Gavin Kilkenny, and there's definitely continuity, and I think you can see that at all the age groups and all the levels. I suppose that's the one thing that people are most impressed with. I feel the general consensus amongst the public in what they're seeing with the senior team is now is the approach and just how we're trying to play even against top quality sides like Portugal, what we saw last night. The teams are going out and obviously they're trying to be play through the lines, play out from the back when it's on. There was a couple of hairy moments, which I'm sure we'll discuss in a wee while. There was one Josh Cullen, I think, played back to Bazuno. But I think that's the thing that's most impressive about what we've seen with Stephen so far, and that's what Stephen told us he would give us. I always knew that would be the case, but I think just from listening to people and the general public and the mood around the place, I think that's what they're most impressed with.
Yeah, and pretty much everybody seems to be on the same page now that this is what the future is going to look like, and that we just need to take a little bit of time. There are some dissenting voices. We heard Liam Brady at the top of the show. He did have a bit of a disagreement with Richie Sadlier last night about Stephen Kenny's future and whether or not he should be given a new contract now. Liam seems to think that we should wait till next summer, get a few more of those Nations League games under his belt, and then assess things. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I didn't hear the full conversation with Liam. I was obviously at the match myself, but I saw little clips on social media, and I obviously heard a lot of people were critical of Liam's comments, but he's entitled to his opinion, Marie, but I certainly would be, and I have been obviously all for Stephen at the start, and that's not blind loyalty by any means, because I always knew in terms of what he was trying to do and the approach that he would take, and this is kind of what we're seeing now at the moment, so I always felt it would play out like this. But I think I've been quite measured and balanced on it in terms of the fact that in the early part when we had the conversations when things weren't going maybe as well, and obviously the COVID situation and all sorts, and there was a lot of things going against Stephen, and even when the results weren't coming, I never really got too down about it, because I knew it was always going to be the bigger picture job, and in terms of taking a lot of time. And just like that, when we had the good results against Azerbaijan and Qatar, I wasn't clamouring for kind of here we go now, this is all going to be great and everything's rosy in the garden as such. So, and that was the same last night. Like, obviously a lot of people were delighted with the performance. I felt it was just a good steady performance. I wouldn't get too carried away by it by any means, but I did see loads of signs of what Stephen is trying to implement, lots of positive signs in terms of the individuals and the young lads that have obviously come into the team. Ogbeni, I thought, was really, really good. The back four, the resurgence of Duffy, as we've seen in many weeks, I thought he was outstanding last night. Young Bazunu in goals, so there's lots of positive. Josh Cullen is really making that position his own now as well. But I was disappointed with Portugal as well, I would have to say. Obviously, Liam felt it was a B team. It wasn't a B team. They left out a lot of their stars, but it wasn't a B team. They still had lots of quality on the pitch, and I was a bit disappointed with them. But I just think it keeps the momentum building with Stephen. Obviously, coming off the back of the good results against Qatar and Azerbaijan, I felt it was important that we gave a good performance and acquitted ourselves well, and we got the point. Could have nicked it at the end, but I just think it keeps the momentum building. But all eyes now focus to the game on Sunday, and I think it's important that we do try and get a victory as well, Marie, on Sunday, because the one criticism that's been thrown at Stephen is the games against Azerbaijan and Luxembourg, where we've let ourselves down against them smaller nations as such. And I think that's going into the game on Sunday. And people have a dim view of them in the terms of they think they're minnows. They're not minnows. We saw Georgia beating Sweden last night. These teams have improved a lot. But still, in saying that, if we're to get to where we want to be, I think we have to get a result and beat Portugal on Sunday.
Well, and I started by asking you about Liam Brady's clip. I know you didn't get to see a lot of it. I suppose I almost forgot there were so many people at the match. 50,000 people at
brilliant.
The match, so they weren't watching the telly. But we do have the clip for anyone who was there last night and didn't get to hear what Liam Brady had to say.
It was all right, but, you know, if you're looking for confirmation that Stephen Kenny's the way to go after that, I wouldn't make a judgment on that. Because
why not?
Because Portugal had a B team out and they played within themselves.
Still a fair bit of class in that team, probably worth hundreds of millions.
Yeah,
but, you know.
They left all the players out that had yellow cards. They were watching the game against Serbia on Sunday. They didn't really go for Ireland.
Did we really go for them? Apart from the last 10 minutes?
No, I thought it was a bit of a sparring match up to the 80th minute. That's why I described it as a damn squib.
Mm-hmm. Richie?
You haven't seen evidence that he should get a contract. Have you seen enough to say that he shouldn't?
No. That's why I would wait, as I said to you before. There's games to come up. After the Luxembourg game, obviously you've got the Luxembourg game, then there's games to come up in March when you think you'll get friendly games because of the Euros. You might have two or three more matches then. Then we've got something like four matches in the Nations League in June. Why don't you gather all the evidence together before you make a decision?
I guess we do have a lot of evidence, though.
There's plenty of evidence. There's plenty of evidence, Marie. And that's what surprised me more so about Liam's comments, because you look at the game so far that we've played, and fair enough, like in terms of if you're viewing it purely down to qualification, we were never going to qualify out of this group, Marie. It was always going to play out like this, and it was always going to take time in terms of him trying to introduce a lot of those new lads and young lads. And you have to remember, you have to put context, I feel, on it when you're judging Stephen, and that even goes back to when he started, at the start of the campaign, and even more so now, because you look at the players and where the pool that he's picking from, the level that they're playing at, and a lot of them are not even playing at that level with their clubs, and it's very difficult to try and bring them in then in your little two match windows or three match windows and get performances out of them. But we've seen in the last four or five matches, and even more so I feel when we have our better players on the pitch, and what we've seen in the last four or five games, that there's continuity in the team selection. You can see exactly what they're trying to do, Marie. Everybody can. When you have Duffy coming out afterwards in the press conference and basically saying, lads, if he can't see what's happening here, you're writing the wrong stuff,
I stuck around for that, actually. I went
and it was
in
a brilliant quote. Yeah. I saw it last night and it was a brilliant quote for him to make. And that, again, that's not blind loyalty by a player just coming, because lots of players come out and people say, well, he has to say that about the manager. He didn't have to say that at all, because if he didn't feel that, he wouldn't say it in the first place. So the likes of that, and you can see with the players, you can see even the confidence that he's brought into Jeff Hendrick's game. I was highly critical of Jeff Hendrick, as a lot of people, for a long time, Marie, because he never really kicked on his career after the Euros. I think since Stephen has come in, we've seen a different Jeff Hendrick in recent games as well. Obviously Cullen, as I mentioned, the emergence of him, and again they're building up a little bit of a partnership between them also. I think we're very lucky in the sense of the players we have at the back, because John Egan's an excellent player, Duffy, Seamus Coleman, obviously the goalkeeper as well, Enda's very steady, Matt Doherty. So that's as good a five as we're ever going to have, really. And then it's just, I suppose, the other side of it you look at in terms of what maybe people might be critical of in terms of us creating chance or getting that goal score. But we've been crying out for a goal score for how long?
And there are green shoots there as well, like, because it's not long
Ogbeni
ago. Ogbeni. But even, okay, Robinson didn't have the best game he ever had last night, but he still, not so long ago, scored a hat-trick in the green jersey of Ireland. So there are players that have the potential. Unfortunately, the likes of Ida are probably not getting enough minutes for his club. And Stephen did mention that last night as well, that he he's just not getting that game time that he needs. And hopefully that will change in time. And if you start to get those players playing regularly all the time, then they'll be able to bring that form to the Irish team.
100%, Marie, because if you look as well, when I was saying about the bigger picture, that was like, some people may view that as, oh, you're writing off a campaign. It was never ever writing off a campaign, and we can't ever write off a campaign. But the situation Stephen found himself when he started off with the job, he was starting from scratch almost. And not only in terms of maybe people say, oh, well, what he was trying to do in terms of the way we were going to play, but he was starting from scratch with a new block of players as such, and trying to bring in a lot of those young underage lads or whatever from the 21s that he brought in. And we've seen some brilliant performances from those young lads, and that bodes well for the future. But the reason I would give him a contract, to answer, I suppose, your question in terms of what Liam was saying last night, if you bring in a new manager tomorrow and he is to start all over again going into a qualification campaign after Christmas, or the new campaign in the summer, he's starting from scratch all over again with lads that he has no relationship with, no, I suppose Stephen has an understanding of bringing them through, obviously the relationship that he's built up with them from under 21 now into senior team. As I mentioned, the confidence he's given Hendrick, so Hendrick all of a sudden feels maybe 8-9 feet tall playing under Stephen, whereas a new manager come in, might not fancy him, he's out of the team again, he's going around with a face on him, you're bringing in a new lad again. So I just don't understand as to why people wouldn't give him a contract. We've seen so much in terms of what he's trying to do. And then, I suppose, on top of all that, Marie, you mentioned it about the crowd last night. Tell me anybody in that ground who's not happy with what they're seeing in terms of Stephen. And he's an Irishman, and you want to support him. And I looked at the group of players that were playing last night, and for the first time in as long as I can remember, it's all young Irish lads. And if you don't want to get behind that, well, then there's something wrong with you.
I think people who aren't supporting him are going to look for negativity wherever they can. And the performance was a really good performance for that Ireland team. So what people seem to be pointing to is maybe that the fact that the opposition weren't what they should have been. And we're getting texts into that effect, you know, that Portugal were a B team and that's the end of the story. And they might have been a B team, but they were still a B team that had Cristiano Ronaldo and Bruno Fernandes in it.
Absolutely, I don't get that argument at all. Of course it wasn't the Portugal that we expected in terms of Cancelo and Bernardo Silva and Jota, top quality players, as we all know.
Yeah,
and as we all know, and there's 6 or 7 top quality stars there in amongst that team. But they still had enough quality on the pitch to, if we're as bad as people are trying to make out, to beat us. But that wasn't the case at all. I felt we were comfortable throughout the match. I never felt, there was one header in the second half, Ronaldo, when he got on the end of it, I thought, here we go, this is the chance. And I thought he should have scored. And there was one after that where he cut inside and bent one to the far post. Other than that, we were never really under any pressure. Did we do enough to maybe go and score a goal? Probably not. Towards the end, I felt, I look back at the time in the ground, it was hard to tell whether it was a foul on the goalkeeper. I look back when I went home and it was very, very soft, Marie. So we could have nicked it at the end. I felt the referee was poor overall on the night in general anyway. But like that, I'm not standing here saying, oh, by all means, it was an absolutely brilliant performance. It wasn't, but it was a very good performance.
Yeah, it really was. Ronaldo, it was funny hearing him being booed so often. I didn't think he'd be booed as much as he was, but he definitely was. That was until the very end of the night when the little girl Addison Whelan went on to the pitch and got his jersey, and the FAI in the last hour or so have released a statement saying that she's not going to be fined, which is
brilliant,
very, very good.
If we needed
that. I don't think she will. Although I'd say maybe if she sold the old jersey she might get the money for the fine, but anyway, she won't have to do that because she's not going to be fined. But it was a very nice moment, and I did see a few people, you know, slagging off the people that were there for saying Ronaldo was great for doing that because we'd been booing him all night. But when he actually saw it, because he had to go above and beyond almost, because the stewards were there and they were trying to take her off, and he had to put himself out there a bit and stop them and engage with her and interact with her, and it did feel genuine.
Marie, I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I loved it, honestly, because there were so many kids at the match last night as well. That's the one thing that struck me with families and kids. There were so many. And obviously they're there to see Ronaldo or whatever the case may be. And he's the superstar of our time, Marie. So is Messi. They're the two superstars of our time. That's what the young fellas are growing up aspiring to. That's what we've grown up looking at. It'd be the same, I'm sure, when George Best played, when Pelé, Maradona, whatever the case may be. They're the superstars of our time. And for the little girl to run on, I know people look, we're living in a time when security and safety and all that kind of stuff, I get all that, but for just a genuinely human moment, for the little girl to run and almost trying to outpace the two security guards, and as she was getting closer and closer, everybody's going, oh, is she going to make it? Is she going to make it? And then right as she's close to him, the fella stops her, and I thought, I was really disappointed for her. And then, to be fair to Ronaldo, he was brilliant. When he saw what was going on, ushered her in, and then, now it doesn't take him much to get the top off to but it was absolutely fantastic.
Here I go.
And it was brilliant from the crowd, the reaction, because like that, Marie, there's a picture I actually posted it today on Instagram, and if you get a chance, there's one of the pictures doing the rounds is from behind, so from maybe from where the goal is, so you can see all the Irish team staff. Every one of them were just mesmerised about that moment. Every one of them were glued to see what was up. The whole stadium for that little second was mesmerised by it. And I thought it was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah,
and I'm delighted she's not getting fined.
Absolutely as well. But I think it was because we didn't know what was going to happen. And I didn't know what to expect from him as well and how he'd react in the situation, because he was clearly frustrated as well with how the game had went towards the end of the match. He had a few chances and they didn't come off. But he was able to just park that and focus in on her. And she did a great interview on Morning Ireland this morning. And even the way she described what was happening, and she was saying that, you know, there was two security coming behind to the side. She could actually see them coming at her, but she still managed to go. I'll actually be interested to see how she gets on as a player. But Ronaldo aside, okay, Portugal, we expected more from them. They didn't deliver. We probably didn't expect that Ireland performance to be so comfortable. It was a decent one. For me, Seamus Coleman was just unbelievably impressive, and to see him in that form, I know there was so much talk beforehand whether or not he would start. Should we keep him for the Luxembourg game? Do you think we're going to see him now for the Luxembourg game as well?
The only worry is, and you hear it obviously in the lead up to the game as well, whether the body holds up to playing obviously two games in 4 days, because obviously Seamus has had his injury woes. So I thought actually Stephen might not play him last night and keep him for the Luxembourg game, but I think maybe his experience and all, he had to really play him last night, and he did. I agree with you totally, he was brilliant. But I think that's the relationship, him and Duffy are close, Egan, and that all matters as well by all accounts. And I remember when we used to have the debates about will he pick Doherty or Coleman. Doherty and Coleman are the best of friends, great friends. And that all matters when it comes on to the pitch as well, Marie. And you can see that cohesion with them and that unity. And everybody speaks a lot about unity and how far it can get you in sport. And there's certainly a spirit amongst that group. I even know from speaking to one of the coaching staff, and he speaks so highly about a lot of those lads, particularly Duffy around the place. He's a great lad. Like them all, I think, to be fair. So yeah, he played really, really well. And even going back to the Ronaldo thing, because they had a lot to deal with Ronaldo. I thought Ronaldo played really well. It wasn't a case of him coming over here like we've seen him with Man United and people saying, oh, well, he's not running around and he's not doing much. He was making himself not all over the place, but he was certainly a threat any time. And it wasn't a case of him going through the motions by any means. He was putting it all in out there last night. And I think he was a little bit frustrated and disappointed by the end. But
it's just dawned on me, Alan, in the last 3 weeks I've seen Messi and Ronaldo play.
There you go.
Yeah, well, Ronaldo definitely runs an awful lot more than Messi does, for sure.
I've seen him twice in the last 2 weeks. He ran more last night than he did but he got a screamer over in White Hart Lane.
So I'll never not be fascinated by the texts and the tweets that come in about Stephen Kenny. There's just no middle ground. It is one extreme to the next. It's people who are pro or against Kenny. So we have people just saying that he's not good enough, he shouldn't be there, and then we've loads of people saying that he's like he's the only manager that's been appointed in the last four that cares about the state of football in Ireland. So, Alan, there just doesn't seem to be any consensus whatsoever when it comes to Stephen.
No, and I just wonder, are people open-minded enough to think that maybe they might have been against them at the start for whatever reason and they're just sticking to their guns no matter what? I think you have to kind of understand what's happening here in terms of the whole bigger picture. And I'm not saying by any means, and I've said this all along, I've said it numerous times, like nobody's thinking Stephen's coming in as the saviour of Irish football. There's a lot of change going on in Irish football, apart from Stephen Kenny, across all levels of the game. But I think with the job that he has in hand, it's very important, I feel, because Stephen knows exactly what's going on the ground in terms of the game here. Whereas my argument always against this is you bring in the likes of people touting Neil Lennon, Sam Allardyce, Alan Pardew, whoever the names that are bandied about, they wouldn't give a monkeys about Irish football, Marie. They don't. None of them would. They'd come over here for maybe their own self-interest for a couple of years to try and get a team qualified, but there'd be nothing about maybe anything sustainable in the future. Whereas, to be fair to Stephen, he's trying to do that. And the only way you'll find out about these young lads is throwing them in and giving them the chance. Would anybody have thought we'll give Ahmed Bamidele a chance when Dar O'Shea got injured? Everybody would have went for the tried and tested experienced fella. Stephen throws in the young fella. And last night, then people are saying, he's a huge loss to us. Whereas two or three months ago, they wouldn't have even known who he was. So that's the only way you're ever going to find out about the lads. And some of them will cut it, some of them won't, Marie. But I think because of the job he has in hand in terms of the fact that a lot of these lads are not playing at club level as well, I think that makes Stephen's job even harder again. Because when you're getting lads in that haven't played regularly at the club, and then you're trying to get them to play and put in a performance of the intensity that we saw last night and then go again on Sunday, that's a juggling act as well that Stephen has to obviously deal with in terms of, you mentioned there, can Seamus play two games in 4 days? And people who don't know football, oh well, they're professional footballers, you should be able to play two games in 4 days. It's not always the case. If you have injury concerns and different things like that, fellas that don't have enough game time under their belt, will they last the pace? There's a lot going on there. And I just don't understand. I know Liam is saying hold off for the time being and maybe look at the Nations League games. I'd love if Dara maybe asked him, well, Liam, if you weren't to give him the contract, what is the alternative?
Yeah.
And I don't see a better one out there, Marie.
Yeah, I don't think anybody has presented someone adequate anyway that you think will sort out the situation that we're in. But it's definitely getting better. And I'm actually really looking forward to the Luxembourg game. I'm looking forward to it because I'm really looking forward to seeing these players again, because we've seen what they can do against Portugal. And just the likes of Shadoze Ogbeni, I'm just really looking forward to seeing him now against Luxembourg.
Yeah, he's one of the coaches from Rotherham, actually. I know from years ago, and he texted me last night after the match to see how he got on. And he says, you won't meet a nicer kid than this fella. And that's all we hear about him. And you, when you think, at one stage, him and Jamie McGrath went out for a short corner last night. It was early in the first half. I remember turning around to my dad, was with me, and I saying, see that lad there? I says, he was playing with Limerick only 3 or 4 years ago, and he stood out. To be fair, I always felt he might go further. And Jamie McGrath playing the Pats and then Dundalk and all. And this is the background of a lot of these lads, Marie. And that's what I'm saying. If you can't get behind this, like, you'd have to really question in terms of, and this, as I say, it's not by no means, if Stephen was struggling, I'd be the first one to say, look, it's not happening for him, it's struggling. But it is happening and it's beginning to happen. And the longer you leave him there and let it build, I think the better it could get, Marie. So I don't understand as to why you would not give him the European campaign, because for me, there is no other alternative out there that's being presented to me. Absolutely not.
Jack Byrne. Jack Byrne looks like he is coming back, Alan. He is coming back to Shamrock Rovers, I mean. Good move for him, good move for the club, do you think? It's been reported anyway that he is going to make a return.
I think it's a good move for Jack, just to be his name to be involved in football and linked with somebody, because the longer you're out, Marie, people tend to out of sight, out of mind. We all know that phrase. And obviously things didn't work out for him at Cyprus, and there's been a couple of little episodes with Jack in terms of the fact that the decisions he's made over the years with different clubs and they haven't quite worked out for him. And it's so important, your decision making about where you go in terms of maybe seeing a pathway of where you're going to play and a manager liking you, and things didn't happen for him at certain clubs. When he came back to Shamrock Rovers, it was the best thing that ever happened to him, because I think the penny dropped to him a little bit as well, and it was almost a case of this could be it for you, Jack. But he absolutely excelled and he was unbelievable. And he's an unbelievable talent, Marie. He's absolutely brilliant. Even when I'm... People give me stick now at the moment because I'm not as praiseworthy towards Shamrock Rovers for this season. That's because the team I was watching last season with him in it was absolutely fantastic with Aaron McInniff. Of course, when you take them out, they're not going to be as good. They're still the best team in the league this year, as we've seen, and they've won the league. But with him in it, they're a totally different team altogether. So if to get him back, I'd worry for the rest of the teams because he's that good, he's outstanding. And even I'd worry, the one thing that always, I know obviously Mick McCarthy was the manager at the time and he was probably, there was a lucrative contract maybe put on the table in front of him. But when he was home here, Marie, he was in everybody's mind. He was in everybody's thoughts. We were watching him every Friday night. He'd score a goal, everybody, he'd be the talk of the town. And he was getting himself into Stephen Kenny's squads or Mick McCarthy's squads at the time or whoever the case may be. That decision to go over there, I don't understand as to why he did, but if it's a thing that he's coming back to Shamrock Rovers, and obviously the news is breaking tonight, it's a brilliant move for him and it's also a brilliant move for Shamrock Rovers.
Absolutely, it'd be great to have him back in the league again. And as you said, there's so many players now coming through the league and making waves then on that Ireland team as well, that it's starting to become a really important place, really, and a really important connection to have with Ireland.
100%. And I suppose you look at the likes of the replacement they brought in for him is Mandrio, and he's been absolutely brilliant. And I think he has the potential to go on and be as good as Jack, maybe, or better. But you think of the squad that's there maybe at the moment, but you bring Jack Byrne into it, and he's a level above all what's there at the moment. And I think it's good for him as well, because he needs to get himself back involved, because he's a great lad. We've got to know him a little bit, obviously, since he's come back. I didn't know him before that, since he's come back to Shamrock Rovers. And the one person who'll be absolutely over the moon if he's back is his mother. She absolutely loves the fact that he's home playing. And that, again, Marie, is a reflection in how he used to play, because he was happy at home. He used to always speak about the homesickness and be away from his mum, and he's very close to his mum. He comes home here, she's cooking him dinner and the tea every evening, and he's happy as Larry going out scoring on a Friday night, Marie. Doesn't get much better than that.
Frank Lampard it's been reported that he has withdrawn from the race to be the next Norwich manager. I thought he was going to get it.
Yeah, I think everybody thought he was going to get it, and it was probably going to be a good move from. I wonder if you were to sit down with Lampard, and it's very, very difficult, I suppose, because when Chelsea come calling, and he's obviously a Chelsea legend, it's very hard to turn that down. I wonder if he was privately would have said, if he didn't take the job at the time that he did with Chelsea, this might have been a better position for him and build his way up. That's why I think what Gerrard has done, I think, might work out better for him, because obviously he went to Scotland and cut his teeth for 2 or 3 years with Rangers there, and now he's coming into the Premier League with a little bit more experience. I know Lampard was obviously at Derby for that period of time, but I just think, and it's hard, as I say, you can't turn the clock back now, but I just wonder, because he lost a fair bit of credibility that time, and particularly, you know, his stock fell, particularly when you see the job that Tuchel did when he came in. So all of a sudden people were saying, you had the same group of players, Lampard, you had everything going for you here, yet you were ninth in the Premier League. Tuchel comes in and wins the league, or wins the Champions League within 6 months and gets them into. So I think his stock fell a little bit because of that. So he probably will have to rebuild that back up a little bit. Norwich probably would have been a good one for him. I don't know why he chose not to take it, but his next move will be very interesting, because he is back on that, I suppose, trajectory where he has to build himself back up a little bit.
What about Steven Gerrard going to Aston Villa?
Yeah, I think it's a good move. I really do, because as I say, the job that he did in Rangers was a brilliant one, I felt, because obviously now I know Celtic weren't as strong maybe when he went up there, but he still had to turn things around and obviously won a league with them. He'll always have that on CV. Everybody speaks about the job that he did at Rangers, and I think it's probably the right time to make a move now down. He has eyes obviously on the Liverpool job, Marie, but he won't get the Liverpool job if he doesn't perform at Villa, so there'll be a bit of pressure in that. But Villa's a massive club as well, and he probably just feels it's time for him to make the move to the Premier League.
Yeah, and I suppose as well, like, Liverpool will have looked at what happened with Frank Lampard too and realised that just because you're a club legend doesn't mean you're going to make a good manager or be able to do something. But
I don't think as well, Marie, he was ever going to get the Liverpool job off the back of the Rangers stuff. He probably had to make the move and, as you say, deliver in the Premier League, and then maybe if Klopp goes or whatever, then he'll probably be in line for it. Whereas if Klopp was to go in the next 6 months or year and he was still the Rangers manager, I don't think they would have went for him straight off.
And Alan, for you then, it must be nice to have this little bit of a break from Manchester United and all the stress that you were under, worrying about the club that you support and whether or not Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to be here in the long run.
I'm just curious as to where Ollie is at the moment and what he's up to. Is he enjoying the break? Because I actually felt, and I still wouldn't rule it out, I felt that we're going to act now in this transfer window. or the, not the transfer window, the international window. And the fact that obviously he went, I think he went home, there was pictures of him going home there, was it last week? I felt they were going to act the club, and I still wouldn't rule it out, Marie, but the only thing is probably what's saving him a little bit at the moment as well, the fact that Conte went to Spurs. Who's out there at the moment? Who would you take? I'm not sure.
Okay, well, plenty to get into over the next few weeks. We're going to take a very quick break now and then we're back with rugby.
Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farms on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected Tesco's nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. We are going to turn our attention to rugby, and Michael Corcoran is standing by to talk us through the Ireland women's team game against the USA. But first, Michael, let's start with the men's team and the news that broke a little bit earlier that they have been hit with a potential COVID scare.
Yeah, they have. It looks as if we've gone from one kind of headline-making thing to another one. Somebody put it to me earlier, you know, like the week is busy enough as it is with the two international matches on, without the other stuff that's come on board, like right from the very start of the week. Now, luckily, you know, Ireland, you know, we've been receiving emails over the last couple of days about English players out with COVID. Owen Farrell last week, Ellis Genge today. But thankfully, the Irish camp have managed to avoid it. So the news broke just after lunch, today, around lunchtime today, that there's a potential for one case and one close contact in terms of the starting team for tomorrow. My understanding is that Ian Henderson and Rob Herring are the two players who missed the Ireland captain's run today. Obviously, they're isolated from the rest until a further PCR test was carried out. It was, and we're just awaiting the results of that now. So who knows what's going to happen in the coming hours, but they are expecting the results of those tests certainly sometime in the earlier part of the night, as distinct from later on tonight. That begs the question, what's going to happen with the starting team? So I'm not entirely 100%, but I would say I'm only speculating that if Ian Henderson is out, I think Tadhg Byrne will come back into the second row. Ronan Kelleher would obviously start, and Dan Sheehan would probably come and sit on the bench. That's provided that Herring and Henderson are the only two players involved, because there's a whole scenario regarding close contacts and everything like that. So it's not the ideal build-up, certainly, for them in terms of the match against the All Blacks tomorrow.
Yeah, but Michael, I guess at this stage as well, like, we're nearly 2 years into it, so they're probably well used to it. I'm sure they have a plan in place. They probably have processes that they go through when this happens, just as long as it's not a widespread outbreak. That's probably the biggest worry. But once it's one or two players, I'd imagine by this stage they can deal with it.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the beauty of you know, having a large squad and training in the case of a large squad, you know, the high 30s, early 40s in terms of players. So it's a matter of somebody kind of slotting in or slotting out, you know. That's the reality about it. They jump in and jump out of training all of the time. Everybody gets a chance. So, you know, the whole idea, the whole plan is that if somebody steps out, there's somebody else to step in. That's the reality. It's just, as I said, the next cab off the rank. That's the way it normally operates.
It's a good way to put it, all right. So you are down in the RDS. The Ireland women's team are going to take on the USA at 7:15. But unfortunately, the build-up to this, Michael, has been completely overshadowed by matters off the pitch. Just bring us up to speed where we are now.
Yeah, it has, and it's really, I mean, it's appalling that it's actually got to this stage, to be fair. Now, in one respect, I think it's, now don't get me wrong when I say this, I think it's good that it's come to a head, because it's probably a debate that needed to happen for the last number of years, and it hasn't actually happened. Now, it's really appalling that it's happened the week of a match. I mean, it's, you know, USA this week, Japan next week. Philip Brown, the RFU chief executive, is hosting the RFU AGM as we speak, and he addressed the media this afternoon, and I put it to him that you know, it's not good preparation, or it's not a good look for the Irish Rugby Football Union that they're embroiled in this controversy, where the director of Sevens and Women's Rugby has to come out and apologise, or kind of apologise, where he said, you know, it's one of these I apologise if I offended you. Rather
one of those
than
classic
I apologize.
Ones. I know the ones exactly.
It's one of those classic, yeah. I didn't mean to hit you, but I didn't mean to hurt you. You know, one of those ones. So he said that the two the two separate. I'm going to use the word investigation.
You know what, Michael? I have the clip here, so let's hear from him, and then we'll chat about it.
Thank God.
There's no instant, easy answers. We can't conjure up something out of nothing. It takes time to develop the game. It takes time to develop players. And there has been some great work done, and sometimes that's lost. There's great work done by our volunteers. There's great work done by our development staff around the country and by the provinces, and we shouldn't forget that either. And it's obviously very disheartening for those people in terms of the criticism that's out there. But at the end of the day, if the criticism is deserved, we have to take it on the chin, and we have to move on and make sure that we move on in the right direction. That's the purpose of the team.
That's the key there, Michael, really, isn't it? Moving on in the right direction. He made the point that it takes time to grow the game and to develop the players, and that's absolutely entirely correct. But the reality is different, though. The reality is that we're actually going backwards now.
Yeah, you know, I've been covering women's rugby for well over 10 years, and I've seen how, you know, it grew. I was there when the team won the Grand Slam under Philip Doyle. I was there when I got to Rugby World Cup semi-final. And I've seen, you know, how it's stagnated and, if anything, taken a few steps backwards over the last number of years. And that hurts. It hurts me as a rugby fan. It hurts me as a person who cares deeply about the game. And I know from, you know, conversations I've had with ex-players, how strongly they feel about it, in terms of how they want Irish rugby to succeed and move forward. And I think it is just appalling, to be honest about it, that Ireland are not a Rugby World Cup next year, and that needs to be investigated, why they're not there. Now, you know, for somebody who's employed by the Irish Rugby Football Union to insult people and insult people's intelligence in the way which it was done at the start of this week, I think is utterly unacceptable. And as I said to you at the beginning, you know, it's time. This conversation is long, long overdue. You know, I'm hoping that now is the right time to have all of these conversations. I'm really looking forward to, you know, the players getting everything off their chest to the review body, to the people involved in the review, because I know they have a lot to say, and they feel really angry and really, really frustrated about the events of this week, and indeed the fact that they didn't qualify for the World Cup next year. And I think that you can't have something that's good for the men's game and then try and implement it in the women's match. That's grossly unfair. It has to be a women-led, a women's-led review. And, you know, in terms of bringing the Irish women's team forward, they have to have a big say in terms of how they go forward. And I think that's massively, massively important.
It really is. And it's also very, very sad that we're in a situation that it took Cliona Maloney regarding the interview with Anthony Eddy as slurry spreading for this to get so much traction. And she got an unbelievable outpouring of support from her teammates, Ciara Griffin, Lindsay Peatley, Alliance, Laura Feely. So many of them came out and backed her. But I just feel so upset for the players that are in this situation, how hurt they must feel, how disappointed in the union they must feel, and also how helpless they must feel, Michael, that they needed to get out there and use social media to be heard and to be listened to, and that is just not right.
It isn't, and I agree with you. And I mean, it shouldn't have been allowed to get to this stage. That's the point I'm trying to make to you. I mean, these conversations should have been something that was going on an ongoing basis, and these type of conversations should have been taking place over a long period of time. But they haven't. And I know, certainly from talking to the people who are involved in the 15s game, particularly in this country, that they have felt completely alienated and completely marginalised over the last number of years. And that's something that has never been addressed by the Irish Rugby Football Union. And their frustration and their anger and everything that goes with that is something that has never been addressed properly. And I'm just hoping that, you know, that this is going to be addressed now, and that people will take on board, the people who give their heart and soul, the vast majority of them trying to juggle some sort of a career, whether you're a school teacher or otherwise, or what you're doing, and try and almost be a full-time rugby player, which you're not, at the best of times. I mean, when they look and they see people like, you know, the types of countries like Wales giving 15 or 20 full-time contracts to players who are taking part in a Rugby World Cup next year, they can only look on with envy, and that's the reality about it. Now, there was a time when Ireland were beating the likes of Wales and Scotland off the park, and we have to get back to those days.
As well, when you think of the changing of the guard that's about to happen with Philip Brown, who is finishing up as CEO, you would hope that the person that comes in does make women's rugby a priority. And when you look at Jonathan Hill coming into the FAI and how the women's soccer team have achieved equal pay status, you see the sponsorship that they get, you see the broadcast deals that they're getting as well, and you can just see and sense from them that they feel valued. And there's a blueprint there for the next CEO of the IRFU to come in and to start treating the Ireland women's rugby team with that little bit of respect, make them feel valued. You don't need to go off and make them professional, but you do need to professionalise the environment that they're in and make them feel like they're part of something. Do you think that the next person that comes in is going to get the support that they need from the people at the top of Irish rugby to do that, Michael?
They don't have a choice. They have to be given that opportunity. I know Greg McWilliams personally from his time when he was involved as assistant coach with Ireland when they won the Grand Slam many years ago, and Greg wouldn't have taken on this job if he thought that he didn't have the full and unqualified support of the Irish Rugby Football Union and those involved in decision making, you know, in terms of funding and everything that the players deserve. I mean, they've got to be treated as equals, and I am absolutely 100% confident that when the review is complete and the findings of the review are taken on board, that whoever's next in charge with their feet under the desk down in Lansdowne Road will certainly implement what is recommended, and we will see the benefit in that in terms of the next generation of coach, in terms of Greg McWilliams and the players and coaches that he will bring on, because it's important that Ireland get back to where they belong, and that's at the top table at Women's International Rugby.
They are playing tonight. I will be joining you a little bit later on, Michael. They're playing against the USA tonight. It's their first time back out on the pitch since they failed to qualify for that World Cup. They will have hopefully parked that disappointment now and start looking to the future. Six uncapped players in the squad as well, which is a sign to Michael that there are players coming through, and hopefully these players will have that opportunity to get game time and to just be moving towards something that they will feel confident that they are moving in the right direction with the team.
Well, you see, I mean, if you want to take up the game at age 5 or 6 or whatever age you want to take it up, you want to aspire to something, and your aspiration is, regardless of what sport you're involved in, you want to go as far as you can in that sport, and you want to play at the highest possible level. Now, some people just get on the club team, some people get on their inter-county team, some people are lucky enough to get on a provincial team, and there's a very, very fortunate top layer of people who can get all the way to the top level and play international at the highest level, you know, whether it's soccer or whether it's rugby or whatever. And that's what I want for the next generation of players coming through, is players who are playing at club level right now. I want them to be able to see that, you know, I can make it. I remember speaking to Amy Lee Murphy-Crowe the other day, and she said, you know, what she wants is to inspire the next generation of players to come along, and perhaps when their time to come to the top level arrives, that perhaps there'll be full-time contracts for Irish women at that stage playing in a full-time league within this country, so you don't have to have people going to Sale or Exeter or Wasps or Gloucester or in the case of Lyndon John Yang going off to Claremont Montferrand to play over there, basically. So, I mean, it's vital, it's crucial. Certainly the Interprovincial Series recently has a big part to play, and it's good to see Maeve O'Leary from Munster, who was absolutely sensational in the course of that Interprovincial Championship, on the bench this evening and in line to make her debut.
And in terms of the game against the USA tonight, they're back on show again. Do you think they're going to be able to park all the hurt and disappointment and frustration that they've been feeling for the last few weeks and put on a performance tonight?
I'm not sure if park is the word I'd use. I think they'll try and channel it into a performance and on the pitch. It's really difficult. They've been through such a horrific, traumatic time, you know, in the last number of weeks with the Parma thing. That was bad enough, not qualifying for the Rugby World Cup. But then, you know, that they had two camps over the last couple of weekends to try and iron that out of their system, and then to have, you know, what's thrown at them during the course of this weekend too as well. So it's like one trauma after the other. That's the reality about it. But these are a very, very resilient bunch who, you know, really want to perform at the highest level they possibly can. Pressure is on them this evening. That's the reality about it. But they're massively determined, I know, to play at the level that they know they can play at, and play at the level that, unfortunately, they didn't play at in the World Cup qualifiers in Parma in September.
Okay, Michael, well, thank you very much for that. And I will see you in a little bit. We are going to cross back over to Adrian Eames now. He is watching the Republic of Ireland under-23s in action against Italy. Adrian.
Yeah, and as it was, Marie, it's still Italy leading here by 1-0. The goal scored after half an hour was a real kick in the teeth for the Irish team, who'd performed pretty impressively up to that point, but the goal has really knocked the stuffing out of them. Jacob Ryan, in fact, was a player who got himself into a bit of a tangle defensively, and Lorenzo Lucha was on hand to power the ball to the net. Since then, Italy have had several good chances. Vignato drove wide. This was in the first half. Ricci as well. And in the second half, Andre Cambiasso flashing a volley just over the top. Jim Crawford has shaken things up. He's brought on JJ Coyote and Festi Obiselli in place of Colm Whelan and Conor Noss to try and get Ireland going. But Ireland trying to battle away, get their way back into this game, but certainly that goal in the first half really ignited the confidence of the Italian players, and they're knocking the ball around at the moment. This is a big game for Ireland in terms of their qualification aspirations. They really have to get something from it, but at the moment it's Italy who lead here by 1-0, and we played an hour.
Thank you very much, Adrian Eames. We are going to take a very quick break, and then we're back with Jane Mangan and racing.
Game on 2FM. Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets range. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. We are going to cross over now to Siobhan Madigan, who is in Daly Mount for the Derby meeting of Bohemians and Shamrock Rovers. Siobhan, any sign of Jack Byrne around that way?
Haven't seen him just yet, Marie, but I think there's a fair amount of wrestling going on between both of these clubs as to which one can attract him for next season. Depending on who you talk to, both have made contact with Jack Byrne, who has previously, of course, played for Shamrock Rovers before departing for Cyprus earlier this year. He is now a free agent, and amongst the clubs believed to be chasing him, Bowes, Rovers. There's interest too from England, from the US, and indeed from the Netherlands. So it's a case of watch this space about Jack Byrne, who would be welcome back to League of Ireland circles, but we'll keep our fingers crossed for that. For Bowes tonight, though, the maths is pretty simple. Two wins from the remaining two league games of the season, and that will secure a fourth place finish in the league table. The Gypsies have, of course, an eye too on the cup final at the end of the month, but the lure of an unbeaten home derby sequence too has its merits over their fiercest rivals. And then there's those that'll say there's nothing at stake tonight. Rovers, well, they've made the journey across the city without their fans, but they already have the title wrapped up and in the bag. But they have failed to win here at Daly Mount Park this season, and they'd really love to right that wrong tonight. Add in to the Danny Mandrell factor. He was earlier this week named as the first Rovers Player of the Month award winner this season, and so it all adds up for a tasty derby, and we get underway here at 7:45.
Very good, Siobhan. Enjoy that, and I will talk to you very, very soon. It is time now to talk to Jane Mangan. Jane, how are things?
I'm very well. I'm looking forward to all the sport happening this evening.
It's all happening. Now, it is a very busy weekend of racing, but we are going to start with off-track matters, Jane. A lot has happened in the last couple of days, and the key story that most people are talking about anyway is the fact that animal remedies that are banned for use in racehorses were seized in a raid on a farm in Kildare just a couple of days ago. The raid was led by the Department of Agriculture, Food and Marine. They were officials acting on their own investigations and information received, and that raid took place at a premises in Monasterevin. The Gardaí were also there as well, and the Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board, their offices were there, and the head of anti-doping, Lynn Hillier. So that happened a couple of days ago. Jane, do we know any more since then?
We actually don't, to be honest, Marie. That happened on Tuesday, coincidentally the same day that the Oireachtas Agriculture Committee published their findings of that hearings that were held over the summer. They concluded that they were satisfied that the IHRB were up to scratch. They did make a number of recommendations, but it is coincidental that on that very same day, the raid that was led by the DAFM, as you said, the Department of Agriculture, Food and Marine, it was understood that they had four officials there. There were three Gardaí, and they then notified the IHRB, invited them to also attend. But it was crucially, Marie, there was two licensed trainers present on site. That was after, actually, the department had arrived, but before the IHRB had arrived. And the person in question understood to not be a veterinary practitioner, rather an equine therapist. That individual had their phone seized and their car seized because it's understood the car contained the banned substances or remedies. So we are going on very little information, but it does seem like somewhat of a breakthrough considering the topics and conversations we've been having since the summertime.
Okay, well, we'll be keeping an eye on that as it unfolds. And to the action then this weekend, as I said, it is a pretty big weekend, Jane. Lots to look forward to. Let's start with the Paddy Power Gold Cup in Presbury Park tomorrow.
Yes, well, we got off to a great start today. There were 6 races run at Cheltenham, Ireland responsible for 3 of the 6 winners. What a way to start. I think that the showpiece of the Cheltenham weekend is actually the Schlore Chase. It's Put the Kettle On returns. We were hoping to see her in Goran Park last month. She didn't run, but she now faces up against Nuba Negra, who she beat half a length in the Champion Chase last year when she became the first and only mare to win the Queen Mother Champion Chase. She faces Politolog Rougevich and Nuba Negra in the Schlore Chase on Sunday. That, for me, is the showpiece event. The Handicap Chase tomorrow, there is a couple of Irish contenders, but there is 4 Irish contenders in the Greatwood Hurdle on Sunday. Jesse Evans, Advanced Virgo for Charles Burns, who the winner on the card today, Bua Boy for Dennis Hogan, and Maxine O'Sullivan, a big ride for her on Tudor City in the Greatwood Hurdle. So Irish contingent very much competitive at Cheltenham, but we've got some good racing domestically too.
You'll be at Punchestown, I'd imagine.
Yes, for sure. I'm going to be there today, or tomorrow and Sunday. I'm on Sunday for RTE. We are covering the Morgiana Hurdle. But before we get to the Morgiana Hurdle, we have a small matter of reintroducing Bob Olinger to the public. He runs tomorrow at 12 noon in the Beginner's Chase. He's arguably one of the most exciting horses in training. We haven't seen him since he absolutely bolted up in the Ballymore Hurdle, landing a lot of banker bets for Irish people at the Cheltenham Festival last year. He was brilliant over hurdles, but he is a point-to-point winner. Some might say he could improve for fences. And then, of course, on Sunday, we have the Morgiana Hurdle. Last year's winner, Abracadabra, faces off against Sharjah, the heavyweight Sharjah. The young gun, Zahir Darasso, was the winner last time. And the dark horse of the race is the mare from Willie Wands's, Echoes in Rain. Just 5 runners, but all of them genuine grade 1 class. It's a good race to get the juices flowing.
Sounds good, Jane Mangan. Thank you so much. Enjoy the weekend. That is all we have time for. I did mention that we'd be talking about Rachel Blackmore. We didn't get time to, but we did tweet out heroics on Jim and Lime earlier today. So do check that out. Alan Colley, thank you so much, as always, for coming in.
And I said on Monday night how much of a star she is, Marie, and there she was producing the goods today.
Never in doubt. Okay. Blonda Tracy is up next.
With Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.